like to begin tonight's talk with a story about a young man in Japan who wanted to be the greatest martial artist of the land. And he thought that to reach his goal, he must study with the best instructor, of course. Probably the best thing to do. And this instructor lived many, many miles away. So one day he left home to go study with this great Zen master. And after traveling for several days, he arrived at the school completely excited. And the Zen master asked him, "What do you wish to learn from me?" And he said, "Well, I want to know your art. I want you to teach me what you know best and in the fastest way possible." "How long must I study?" asked the pupil. And the master says, "Well, 10 years at least." And the guy thought, 10 years is a lot of time. He says, "No, I want to get done sooner, so I'm going to make double effort so I can get done. What if I studied twice as hard as everyone else? How long would it take me then?" And the master says, "Well, it would take you 20 years, which means double time." And then the student thinks, "Well, it's even longer. How come? This is not normal. I don't want to spend 20 years learning something. I've got other things to do with my life." Don't we think that for our own meditation practice? And so he's really, you know, determined and says, "Well, what if I practice even harder? Will it take quicker?" And he said, "No, it will take 30 years. So from 10, we're going to 20 to 30 years. And the young student was really confused and puzzled and didn't understand why. He was really asking, "Can you please explain? How is it that each time I say that I'm going to work harder, you tell me that it will take longer?" And the master, with his wisdom, says, "Well, the answer is very simple. When you have one eye turned towards the destination, there's only one eye with which you're going to be able to work." So I hope we have our two eyes here to be able to look clearly at what is present in the moment. And there's no doubt that attachment to results or attachment to goals, which is exactly what this young man was manifesting in relationship to martial arts, there is a sense that we are, of course, going to be having a longer time to put ourselves into the practice. The quality of being that we are talking about requires a very specific attitude, actually. An attitude which is completely different than the one that we're used to use, because of the aim is not somewhere else, but it's in the moment. Therefore, I'd like to talk a little bit more about this attitude, which we call mindfulness, and the way to have this quality of mindfulness be nourished by a very specific quality, which I named allowing. Mindfulness has this aspect of allowing within it. You know, we can say, okay, recognize what's here, and if we only talk about recognizing, there's no doubt that with our confusion and our mind states and our pain, there's going to be reactivity. No doubt. Every one of us has encountered, I'm sure, reactivity. So the recognition is one piece. But then is, how is it when I recognize? Am I reinforcing, feeding reactivity? If so, I'm just creating more pain for myself. Therefore, there is this extremely important quality which we name in the teachings unconditional acceptance. Unconditional acceptance. Which is the same as the allowing. We understand that life is ever-changing sensations, feelings, emotions, thoughts. Things arise and they pass, right? I mean, never do we encounter one moment and it's the same from morning to evening. You probably saw this very clearly. But to know it intellectually is not the same as experiencing it in truth, in the authentic way of feeling what it means to experience. And what we see, and usually the, one of the first insights that come for each one of us, we've had this insight, meaning wisdom, understanding, based in experience, is that however much we want pleasant to last, it's not possible to control it. Even if this is what we try. And so the insight of not being able to choose our experience makes us believe or think that we are not being successful in our practice. Because we have this habitual way of dealing with ourselves, where a big part of what we are with is success and failure. So if there's pain, I feel that there's failure. If there's pleasantness, I feel that I'm successful. And this is not the attitude that will help in our practice. So what happens is that, not seeing that, we try ways to further our progression on what we think should be happening. And a lot of the practice is happening at the level of bringing up this thought and really being able to know, oh, what is it that should be happening in my practice? What is it that I'm expecting? After a few days of settling down, after we've been arriving, you know, we give a lot of emphasis on being here, so we do try to be here a little more with the breath, and there's certainly many of us are noticing that we are more present than when we first arrived. No doubt. Each and every one of us. And when we land, or when we begin to arrive, we start noticing all the different strategies that we put in place to try to manage to look in a certain way rather than to meet what is present. And the way that we manage is very clearly manifesting for many of us, the way that we try to improve or to fix. And so one of the strategies is this capacity to really notice how we are in relationship to what is happening. How we begin to have this process of bargaining or negotiation in relationship to whatever it is that is appearing. Bargaining or negotiating is completely part of the picture. It's part of what we're going to meet. And what I think is so important is that there's nothing wrong with this. It's completely normal that it comes up at the surface. Many of you have said that what is happening is not what you expected would be happening. That's exactly what I'm talking about. There's a sense of noticing that maybe there's a disenchantment. We sit, we walk, and we begin to evaluate. Now, the evaluation is nothing else than a thought. If we can see that thought as just another thought, then of course there's no problem, because it doesn't get imposed. The problem is that we believe the thought. So we start judging ourselves, and we start judging our practice in relationship to what is coming up. And rarely do we have the thought, accept whatever it is that is manifesting, or accept the experience the way it's presenting itself. We get there at times, but rarely do we get there immediately. We go through this whole loop, this cycle of bargaining and negotiation. And this is important to realize and to bring in relationship to noticing what we called, Charles or I, the attitude. So you can see that it's so much more rich than just being. Of course, there's a settledness, and the more we settle with the experience of just being with one anchor, there is a quietness, but from that quietness we really open the field of experience to also include what is manifesting when other experiences are happening, so that we don't need to just stay in a certain situation or with a certain condition to be able to be with the experiences as they are. And so what we see is that the evaluation or the judgment is a very subtle or gross resistance. There is a kind of resistance that comes up. And often we don't realize that, because there's a kind of denial. We deny that the resistance is present. Therefore, we don't see it, and we try to fix or to improve. And the fixing and the improving is just another form of staying caught into this resistance of denial of what is. Now, what's so important is that even though we're trying to improve or fix, we're not here to make things be a certain way. And that's often the tendency that one will have, is that we want the practice to go a certain way. There's no doubt that there's a huge wanting at times, wanting results, wanting achievement. Maybe we don't even know what we want, but there's this wanting, because it's just the habit, the conditioning of wanting something else, which we take into the practice in the same way that we do in relationship to what's happening in life. Wanting another experience, wanting another relationship, wanting whatever it is that is appearing. This will happen in relationship to practice in the very same way, except that if we continue to create that wanting, then we stay really confined in the conditioning. So the practice takes us at another level and in another direction to ask of us that we open to what is, rather than try and put the effort into changing. And this is a very big shift. It's huge. Because we're not used to it. Because it's really not our habit and our tendency. So it's taking the power of mindfulness, of strength of heart, of courage, to take that quality of attitude which says maybe this isn't the direction. Maybe the direction is to allow what is to surface, so that there's a sense of wholeness, of completeness that can manifest. So I would like to talk a little more about this acceptance, which naturally leads us to whatever it is which is present is enough. Whatever it is enough. And what it means is that we just don't nourish or feed the resistance. And so how do we do that? Well, it's important to understand the word acceptance. because often the word acceptance is misunderstood. Sometimes it implies resignation, right? Or passivity. Which is not the case here. Sometimes it implies an imposition. Accepting meaning, oh, I should accept. I'm imposing myself to accept. And often this is what will happen. We're going to take this willpower, since we're not heading in direction of changing things, then we're going to be using the same active willpower to impose myself to accept. And it's not the way, because the imposition is just another form of wanting. And you can really notice it in relationship to being very intimate with yourself, that if in my mind there is the thought, this should be okay, then it's just another way that I'm wanting the forcing to accept. Underneath thinking that something should happen from it. The imposing is kind of underlying the surface of saying, okay, imposing, enabling something should happen from that. So it's not that at all. In the Buddha's teachings, absolutely nothing is to be imposed in relationship to acceptance. So it's not about thinking that something should happen. It's not about running away from what is happening. So what else is there? You might know the answer. What else is possible? Being with what is. Which is this fantastic quality of mindfulness. Now, being with what is, and very naturally, how can I not exclude the suffering that I'm going through? And that's so interesting. How can I accept this body pain? You know, it may be all right for the Buddha, but there's no way that I can accept this. Well, when we think like that, there's a confusion. Because acceptance doesn't mean liking something. And that's what we often think. Ah, I'm accepting because it should be likable. Because there's something that is in the sphere of making it nice, pleasant. And we confuse liking with just being. So of course, everything that's pleasant, I'm going to be really going in the relationship of accepting. And everything that is unpleasant, I'm not going to be able to accept. And that's exactly what we want to see. Being means that if it's not acceptable, then we are aware of the fact that we're not accepting. So it's not an imposition. We are really allowing, oh, this pain, I can't bear it, I don't want to accept. This is the actuality of the experience. The unbearableness. It is unbearable. Okay, so this is the experience. It's accepting the fact that it is unbearable. It is accepting the fact that we are meeting the aversion, rather than reacting with aversion in relationship to aversion and feeding the loop. We're just allowing the aversion to be met. And this is the way to allowing, rather than denying, rather than imposing, rather than doing anything about it to change the experience. So it's actually opening to what is, even if it is unpleasant. So I'm not making things acceptable. Do you see what I mean? There needs not be a change from what is to be able to be with. It's just the truth that we're meeting. And if the truth is, this is not acceptable, then that's the truth. So it's much more simple to meet the reality of the moment than try to escape it. And that's often what we do, constant escape. So it's going in the direction of being able to be with the not wanting mind. If it's the not wanting, then this is what I'm going to be meeting. That's the actual experience. And there's a wonderful phrase for this with, I don't know if you know Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, but she says, you're not okay, I'm not okay, but it's okay. Which is exactly what I'm talking about. Whatever it is okay. We may not think that we're okay, this other person's not okay, but it's okay. And the fact that it's okay, we're never asked to pretend then that it's not okay, or that it is okay. There's no pretense in that mode. And that's often what we deal with. A lot of the process is going through this mode of bargaining. And the bargaining is kind of a false acceptance, no doubt. You know? It's okay, I'll watch you pain. Not really to be in the presence of this pain, but pretending that I'm there to accept it, and yet waiting for it to go away, waiting for it to change. Isn't it so? Very clearly, no doubt. And so the attitude here is, okay, there's resistance, and we really want to bring the mindfulness to that type of relationship. As long as there's false acceptance or pretense, there's no doubt that that manifestation, that experience, will remain. Not only will it remain, but it will probably intensify, increase, have a sense of solidity, because we're not just being with what is actual. We're trying to fix, to improve, to change. And that's exactly what we're going to be able to see over and over again. So rather than pretend, okay, this is really hurting. That's the actual experience. Can I just be with it and feel the pain? It's okay. It's okay. So often there's this view or this idea or the thought, this will be acceptable when the conditions will be different. And in our life, it's often like that. We'll be okay if this and this and this changes, right? Rather than just allowing ourselves to open the space to be able to allow a little more spaciousness and openness to be present for what is. There's a wonderful line from one of my dear teachers. Whenever I would go into an interview with him and he would really hear quite a number of times my complaints about my practice, whatever it was. You know, we have a million ways that we can complain, and things not being exactly how I wanted them to be in relationship to what was happening, and then expectation of when is it going to change. And I would always say, give me the trust. And he said so many times to me, he says, allow without exception. That was his line. Allow without exception. Meaning, allow without exception is open to this. Be experiencing this moment. And so how we do that? We trust in awareness. We trust in mindfulness. And the way that Charles said is, don't interfere. Right? He also uses the word, don't disturb the practice. Meaning that it's the way that we interfere that we have a tendency of wanting to change things. So it's maybe contradictory for the people who are beginning. So where's the effort? You know, what are we doing as an effort? Because naturally there is an effort that is requested, no doubt. The effort that is required, or the energy that is required, is to show up. Because we're so lost into distraction, we're so lost into our imagination and our dream world and, you know, all our hopes and our fears and expectations, lost in our stories mostly, that there's no doubt that we need an effort and put some energy, and that energy is to show up, to be present, to be in the moment. But if we re-emphasize that effort, then it's too much effort, because it's the effort to change things rather than the effort to just allow without exception. And that, of course, is something that needs to be cultivated and to learn as we are practicing. You can hear my words, but you're going to be really learning about the right effort in relationship to how much you lose yourself in the wanting, in not being able to accept, in not being able to allow, and suddenly you'll find your balance again. And in finding your balance, you'll be able to move right in the presence and the actual experience, to be able to be with it, and it's okay. And it's just okay. Now, this may take a long time at times, or it may take half a second, and suddenly we're here to meet the present moment, to meet whatever experience it is, whether it's beautiful, pleasant, nice, or really unpleasant. So there's this whole wonderful way of balancing effort. And this balancing effort, we really learn. We learn not through force, and there's no doubt that we're going to be using force at times, striving, and then we get impatient and frustrated and we lose our temper. And then we come back. And we find this beautiful quality of metta, of kindness, of care, of gentleness, which no doubt is helping us on our way. So this push and pull is often the movement that will take us in one direction and then in another, and as we meet the experience through the body is often the reference point to regaining a sense of steadiness. And that is why we have the anchor. The anchor is definitely a kind of a rebalancing act from which we can again encounter ourselves in relationship to rebalancing the energy level. What we often see is that we contract around the unpleasant states. There's a contraction. And when we begin to have the sense of contraction around the unpleasant state, this is exactly where we go into the opposite state of allowing. Contraction means resistance, no doubt. But what we see is that this discomfort often comes from holding on to not wanting to meet rather than just allowing the painful feeling. And so if you take a body pain, you can really notice how much pain is present in relationship to what's in the body, how much is it mental reactivity, meaning the not wanting to feel. And that's exactly where we really bring in this fantastic exploration around attitude, the relationship. And often it's the mental reactivity that is much more painful than just the bodily sensation, what the Buddha called the second arrow. Right? The first arrow is the pain itself, and then the second arrow is reactivity in relationship to doing something about it, which just reinforces the pain, whether we blame ourselves, whether there's judgment about it, all of the ways that we reinforce the resistance. There's an arrowsmith which gets a poison arrow, and then rather than having the arrow taken out, it's said in the sutra that he asked, who put this arrow in? From which angle did the arrow was sent? Is this poison very poison? And so all these questions really tend to ask questions about why, how, when, instead of the first thing that one would do is pull out the first arrow, right? And it said in the sutra, he really had time to die because he was asking all these questions. And it's exactly all the thoughts that we have in relationship to trying to find a solution when the solution is just to much simpler than that. So it's really about how we often try to make things different than what they are. And in the deepening process, since you've been here for a few days, there's no doubt that we're at this level of really often, for many people, great discomfort. There's great discomfort because we are deepening the process and we are meeting, facing the aspects which are not so pleasant. But the deepening is exactly the where the work is done. It's kind of meeting ourselves and seeing much more clearly. So there's, whether you know it or not, there's an improvement in a way of working with the hard stuff or the difficult stuff rather than being in avoidance. And through this learning, as the Dalai Lama would say, it's mostly the difficult places that wake us up. It's not only just the pleasant and, you know, the calm and the easy sittings. I would have a really hard time understanding that. And so much resistance to being interested in those painful sittings and stick with that until I really sensed that there was no way around it. If we want to be meeting ourselves with all our parts in completeness, there's no doubt that the what we call the shadow parts need to come up to the surface and be manifesting, and transformation happens in relationship to meeting the whole of who we are and not just the pleasant states and push away what we don't like. I mean, this is a practice which no doubt is bringing us to more freedom, and a big part, and I've seen this over the years, is the purification process. There's a real sense of kind of cleanliness and purifying, and the purification process, of course, is one where we're going to be, you know, meeting the friction and going in the direction of everything except acceptance. And we learn. We learn from that, there's no doubt. This is how we learn. So how do we learn? By giving space. And I think that it's kind of a very important piece here is to show up, and then if we don't interfere, very clearly that spaciousness, that openness happens by itself. We maintain the contraction by not wanting this experience, whatever it is, to be present. If we don't interfere, there's no doubt that often things dissolve by themselves. So the invitation is to open. Settle and open. And as I said to a few of you, then the anchor, which may be a very settled place in the body when there are difficulties, can be an anchor which may happen, for example, with hearing, where there's a greater space, an openness in relationship to the space within which awareness is manifesting. So that that energy, which is contracted, can flow more freely, can really kind of release. The word release is something which probably is the best to use in this case. And then the transformation comes from allowing this energy, which has been so held in, to dissolve, to really allow itself to have the space. So we use so much energy to not allow our moments the way they are. And if you are exhausted, if you are tired, really ask yourself, how much energy have I been using to not allow, to not accept what has been happening? Whether a moment, whether half a day, whether whatever the amount of time. If you're tired, there's no doubt. We contract, we resist, we want it to be different, we want it to be another way, we want it, we want it, we want it. Okay, so it's painful, but it's really one of the ways that there's possibility to do otherwise. See, in relationship to body pain, there's not much we can do by meeting it. In relationship to emotional pain, if there's sadness, if there's anger, if there's despair even, or hopelessness, we meet that. But in relationship to how much I'm trying to have it differently or react, this is a space within which there's a possibility of choice, of intention. Going in the direction of allowing, opening, rather than resisting. And every time we're able to do that, it has a huge impact, actually. Every time we're able to just stop resisting, it's not necessary to resist the pain, what happens is trust builds. Trust replaces the resistance. And what do we trust in? We trust in the path. We trust in whatever you want to call the path. We trust in mindfulness. We trust in awareness. We trust in the way of the actuality of things. What we call trusting in the way things are, which is what the Vipassana means. So it's quite beautiful because it's the trust that grows from that spaciousness of just allowing things to be the way they are. And the being mode then allows for ourselves to be in touch with what is. And we're less than in expectation. What happens is expectation is no longer present in those moments. We're stopped being contracted in the hope and the fear. Hoping something's going to come, fearing that it's not going to come. And that's the double bind. When there's hope, there's fear. See what I mean by that? It's very clear that one is bound by the other. And so we can really allow ourselves to see all of our parts, all that we have walled down. Maybe some shame, maybe some blame, maybe some judgment. Everything that we don't like to see about ourselves has a chance to surface. And it's rich. It's extremely rich. Because then there's a greater sense of compassion. We're not using the hostility or the aversion to meet these states that are painful. But we're really allowing ourselves to meet these states with much more kindness and openness. So this is the work. Another thing that may be very helpful is using what I call that intention. The intention, and really placing the intention to be able to be with things as they are, allow without exception, at the beginning of a sit or a walking. And then, just allowing things to be the way they are. But it's to reinforce this quality of freshness in the mind, of not doing the practice in a rote way, meaning with routine and habit. So the intention here is extremely valuable because it gives just that freshness and interest in being able to relate to what is. And slowly some seeds will be planted. You know, just in the same way that when we have used the intention for kindness, for metta, probably we see at least a few moments the fruits of planting the seeds. One moment when there's a sense of just connection, that's all. And those planting seeds of kindness, even to painful mind states or painful body pain, allows us to move in the direction of more acceptance. There's relief to allow. And we just don't freeze the reactivity. And trust to experience. So intention is quite important. One of my teachers, the one that I've been working with lately, who's in Burma, Sayadaw Tejiniya, says all the time, you know, you really need to ask yourself in relationship to intention, what do you want? Usually people will say, he's so funny, he says, everyone wants a pleasant sit and everybody doesn't want an unpleasant sit, right? He says, do you agree with that? You all want pleasant sits and you want to avoid unpleasant sitting. And often the result of that is that we end up being very unhappy, because mostly we get unpleasant sits when we want pleasant sits, and we never get enough of the pleasant ones. And so he says, why don't you ask yourself another question? The question that will lead to understanding. He says, what did I learn? That's the question that one asks about a path which leads to more understanding, to more wisdom, to more freedom. At the end of the sit, rather than ask yourself or tell yourself, even judging the sitting, whether this was a good sit or a not good sit, meaning pleasant or unpleasant, really ask yourself very truthfully, what did I learn? And the learning often comes from just allowing and going in the direction of accepting, which means this is enough. Whatever it is that is presenting to yourself, may it be enough. And he would really emphasize that quality of being enough. Who we are is enough. You don't need to be another being. You don't need to be a perfect being. You don't need to have a perfect meditation. Perfect meditation doesn't mean anything in relationship to freedom. So it's great, because it's kind of such a relief when you hear that. We don't need things to be happening in a certain way. It's so relieving. I don't know how you hear it, but when I was hearing it, it was just like, wow, I can just, you know, be who I am, allow the practice to be the way it is, and live with a lot more lightness, a lot more joy, actually, doing the practice, rather than needing to impose a certain way and how it should be, and then discourage, and then, you know, all of the patterns that we habitually have, because we're so caught in expectation, hope, and fear. There's an autobiography in 5 short chapters. So there's 5 chapters, okay? So the first one says, I walk down the street, there's a deep hole in the sidewalk, I fall in, I'm lost, I'm helpless, it takes forever to find a way out. The second chapter, I walk down the same street, there's a deep hole in the sidewalk, I pretend I don't see it, I fall in again, I can't believe I'm in the same place, it still takes a long time to get out. The third chapter, I walk down the same street, there's a deep hole in the sidewalk, I see it is there, I still fall in, it's a habit. My eyes are open, I know where I am, I get out immediately. The fourth chapter, I walk down the same street, there's a deep hole in the sidewalk, I walk around it. And the fifth chapter, I walk down another street. Well, this is really what the path is about. You know, it's a process, right? We may walk around and around and be stuck with the first chapter, the second chapter, and one moment we walk down another street, and that is the moment we let it be and we let it go. We're not fooled anyway to do something about it. And this is exactly the difference between constantly wanting to do to help. It's amazing, because it's out of an intention of trying to help ourselves out, except we fall back in. We get caught and we fall back in until we understand that it's in the non-doing, the being, that things will resolve of themselves, allowing things the practice, the path, trusting the mindfulness that it takes care of itself. The less we interfere, once we're present, everything happens. Everything manifests and unfolds in a way where we're finding what we deeply wanted to find. The wholeness, the completeness, the totality, the dropping away of the sense of separation, fragmentation, because we're no longer struggling to be someone else or to have another experience. This is what happens. And I think the important piece is the quality of patience. We don't often think about that quality of patience. Patience is not something that we really nourish. As one teacher said, we have become an impatient society. Everything has to be done fast, the results have to come fast too. And in our meditation, we have exactly the same attitude. The Dalai Lama says, it's because we're so impatient that we don't understand what patience is all about. And that's exactly what happens. So we cultivate patience. And there's no doubt that if there's one quality that you're cultivating here is patience. Just allowing without exceptions is patience. It's totally valuable. So the beautiful quality of patience comes as a firm foundation for our understanding of the Dhamma. It has a strength, but it has a gentle strength. And that's why it can be nurtured every single moment. And that quality of patience is just like, for me, the image is a gentle flowing river. And that energy is so soft, and in relationship to practice, it is named constancy. The fact of being constant. This is what is called here patience. This teacher of mine said, be soft, be kind, be aware in a gentle way, because we're not pushing ourselves out of the present moment. Right? This is everything that I've been talking about until now. We're really allowing ourselves to touch the moment, and then the moment, and then this moment. With the efforting, often we push ourselves to the next moment and the next thing. So we really allow ourselves to be receptive. And the patience here is the constancy. It's this very gentle, soft awareness, but continuous. From morning to evening. With whatever we do. So it's not just about sitting and walking. It's when I go brush my teeth, when I wake up, when I drink a cup of tea, when I, whatever I do, my yogi job, I'm on the toilet, whatever I do, can I do it in relationship to cultivating this quality of mindful patience, patient awareness? And then no doubt that it comes forth much more easily. And trust builds. So it's constancy, and it's amazing, because there's a huge benefit that we feel from that quality. of gentleness and kindness born out of patience. It's a flexibility. And what happens is that instead of reactivity, which is making us so rigid and so contracted in our body, we allow for this lightness of heart, which is making everything much more supple and flexible, where even if there are difficulties, like the gentle flow of the river, it will go around rather than oppose and confront. You see, it's really the path of the least resistance, instead of banging in the wall all the time, confronting. So it's huge in relationship to attitude, how much we can go in the direction of really creating a lot more suffering for ourselves, or helping and at least have the intention to soften and to be with in a relaxed way in relationship to what is. Okay, so I've said enough. I'm just gonna end the talk tonight with a little poem. You know I like poems, right? This one is from Kabir. It says, "Don't go outside your house to see flowers. My friend, don't bother with that excursion. Inside your body, there are flowers. One flower has 1,000 petals. That will do for a place to sit. Sitting there, you will have a glimpse of beauty inside the body and out of it, before gardens and after gardens." So as we sit, we really can have this connection of kindness and care and see ourselves being a growing flower within which there's a beautiful garden, planting the conditions and watering the seeds for the conditions to manifest. And it's not easy work, but so valuable. So what we'll do now is we'll lie down. Or sit, if you like. We'll end the evening with just 10 minutes of meditation. And after that, we'll be able to walk a little bit. And tonight, it's a wonderful evening because there's a surprise. A surprise before going to bed. So holding yourself with this wonderful quality of the earth which is supporting you, just relax, be at ease, and how much are you able welcoming this wonderful sense of relaxation, relaxing the body, and just being in this moment. Allowing the body to relax. Feeling the breath, maybe, or just feeling the entire body sitting. If you're sitting, or lying, if you're lying. with a sense of alertness at the same time. Relaxed and wakeful. Relaxed and wakeful. Being receptive for whatever it is that is present right now. What kind of attitude is needed to be receptive, just to receive this moment as it is? Allowing, opening to this moment. Appreciating ease. And now taking a few moments on your own. To offer, give, express metta, kindness, gentle care to yourself in whatever way feels appropriate. I be at ease with the way things are. like staying with yourself. If there's someone that you'd like to invite in the field of your awareness of your presence, please do so. Radiating kindness, care, in a very gentle, soft way, just connecting and wishing well. Be there other beings that you'd like to invite in as a way of sharing. Space with kindness and care. Very simple. Than yourself leave and coming back to this moment in relationship to feeling our body, our heart, just welcoming whatever it is that is present. Being soft and gentle with whatever it is that is present. taking a few moments to end the sit, a few reflections on gratitude. Just a sense of appreciation for everything that's been given to us, offered to us, everything that's been offered from you to you. Able to really allow in whatever has been understood, seen, all the seeds of kindness, of care, of wisdom. This may nourish a sense of gratitude, just being thankful for everything that has been met, experienced. Maybe even the painful experiences that have emerged and that have been a source of understanding. Gratitude to end to all the meditators with whom we share this time. It's an extremely important support. To the staff that's taking so much care and kindness their generosity in whatever way feels appropriate for you, just feeling the breath, or just connecting with the heart, or ending with a few reflections. like last night, you may do 15, 20 or half hour of walking and then go to bed. Before going to bed, go to the dining room if you wish to meet the surprise. And then of course, if you have energy, really use this precious time to continue practice a bit as long as you want. And if you're tired, it's absolutely important that you rest and be fresh in the morning. Good night.